Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One of the key concepts running throughout really all of Gabriel Marcel's work and playing a significant role in concrete approaches to investigating the ontological mystery is a term that we translate as availability. And, you know, that could be a little bit misleading. Think about what are your availabilities for having this conference call. It's not quite the same thing as that. It's a broader conception, and it's a translation of the French term disponibilité, to be at the disposal of somebody, and hence to be available. And it comes up in a context within this particular essay where Marcel is framing the traditional Christian virtues of faith, hope, and charity in terms of his own philosophy. And what's corresponding to charity is availability. And this is connected to, as he says, being as presence, being present to another. And so he brings this up without mentioning availability at the very beginning by talking about some other terms, being given as presence. And so he says that we have to examine this neutral and ambiguous term, presence, and replace it perhaps with influx. And he goes on and he says, it's only on the level of the meta-problematical that the notion of influx can be appropriately understood. If influx were taken in an objective sense, like a physical force, we would be no longer in metaphysics but physics, and then this would give rise to all sorts of objections. But then he goes on and he says, when I say that a being is given to me as a presence or as a being, which amounts to the same thing, for the other is only a being for me if he or she is a presence, this means I cannot treat the other as if he or she were simply placed there, positioned in front of me. It's not a merely spatial relationship between two totally independent, separate things. He goes on and he says, there arises between the other and me a relationship, which in a certain sense goes way beyond the conscious awareness I may have of it. And he uses other ways of arranging this in terms of prepositions or our understanding of spatial relationships here. He says, the other is not only before me, the other is also within me. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that the other somehow penetrates me, you know, with their aura or presence or something like that? Well, yes, in a certain sense. I make room for themselves within the complex thing that is my being. And he goes on and he says, more exactly, the physical categories are transcended. They're no longer accurate or illuminating. The word influx expresses, though in too spatial a fashion, the kind of, notice the term he uses here, enrichment from within that happens the moment presence occurs. Now, this could be other human beings. This could be reading an author and learning about them through their book. This could happen through the experience of music, something that Marcel is very attuned to. This could happen also with animals or with the environment. But there's something more. There's a richness that's being provided that means that I am in some way taking something else within me. And he goes on and he says, even when I can neither touch you nor see you, I feel it. You are with me. It would be a betrayal of you not to be assured of this. And then he says, with me. Let us notice here the metaphysical character of this word with, which has so rarely been acknowledged by philosophers, and which corresponds neither to a relation of inherence, nor of immanence, nor a relation of exteriority. It will be of the very essence, and then he says, and here I must use the Latin word, of a genuine co-esse. Esse is the word for being. Co, together. A being with, a being together. That doesn't amount to simply a confusion or a effacement of the differences between the others in this. Recognizes that there is a distinction, but which makes room in the self for somebody else to be there. Is this the same thing as when we say, I'm giving somebody space rent-free in my head, internalizing their voices, for example, or their values? it can be connected with that, right? That can be part of what he's talking about as availability, but that's not the only way. And there may be times where we don't, where we need to expel them, you know, from our head as well. Not only so that, you know, it's good for us, but also so we can be with others as well. And so there's a kind of intimacy that he talks about here, a real intimacy susceptible to the kind of decomposition that a critical reflection subjects it to. But we know already there exists another kind of reflection that reflects on this one, right? So this is a possibility for us, not just when we're experiencing things or being with other people, but even when we're doing philosophy. We can be with Marcel as we're going through this essay. We can make room for him. He goes on and he tells us that we're preparing to move into another realm here. And he says, the value of such an intimacy will be that much greater and incontestable as the relationship situates itself more clearly in a world of complete spiritual availability, that is to say, of pure charity. And I observe in passing that the ascending dialectic of creative fidelity corresponds to the ascending dialectic of hope. So he's talking about something here that goes beyond just the individual connected with another individual. He's not just talking about one's own capacity for availability. He's talking about a world and the degree of complete spiritual availability or charity within it. What is this word charity? Another way of translating this is love. In traditional Christian theology, in addition to the cardinal virtues that were recognized by ancient philosophers of justice, wisdom, fortitude, and temperance, there were also distinguished these three virtues. They're not the only ones, of course, talked about, but faith, hope, and charity. And charity, we often think of as, well, I'm going to give something to those who are less fortunate than myself. That is an act of charity. That is not the totality of charity. Charity means love. Caritas is a form of love towards the other. The translation in Greek of this that some people may know is agape, this self-giving capacity for benefiting others. Not just benefiting them by checking off a box or handing them some money, but genuinely being engaged with them. So he talks about experiences that we have of availability and inavailability. And this is quite interesting here. He says, it's an undeniable fact of experience, but one that's difficult to translate intelligibly, that there are certain beings who reveal themselves to us as present. What does that mean? He gives examples here, who are available when we are suffering, when we need someone in whom to confide. And there are others, by contrast, who don't give us that feeling, despite whatever may be their goodwill. And here, he's making some important distinctions, right? So there's experiences that we have of those who are present for us, available for us, and those who are not. It's not the same thing as goodwill. A person can have goodwill and at the same time be unavailable in this respect. So I wish you the best, sincerely, blah, 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 and send you on your way. It's also not the same thing as attentiveness, as he points out. He goes on and he says, we must note right away that the distinction between presence and non-presence cannot be reduced to the opposition between the fact of being attentive and that of being distracted. The most conscientious attentive listener can give me the impression of being unavailable. He or she brings me nothing. They cannot really create a space for me in his or her life, no matter what material services he or she may lavish on me. And then he says, in reality, there's a way of listening that is a giving of oneself. There's another way of listening that is a refusal to give of oneself. A material gift or a visible action is not necessarily a sign of presence. Presence is what availability is. Presence to the other, making room within yourself, within your life, for that person. And what's on their mind, what their needs are. Perhaps inarticulate, not well thought out needs. You might have to listen to some of their nonsense and BS before they can actually reveal to you what their real issue that they're struggling with is. And so that's availability, right? Being attentive, being a good listener, nodding, saying, so what I hear you saying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that's not necessarily the same thing as availability. It's whether you give yourself to the other or not. And giving yourself doesn't mean talking about all your own stuff and framing it just in your own ways. It also means a sort of receptivity as well. Giving and not taking, but giving and getting, giving and accepting, giving and even welcoming go hand in hand here in availability. It goes on and says, this is a really great way of framing it. The being who is available is the one who is capable of being totally with me when I need him or her. By contrast, the being who is unavailable is the one who seems to extend a temporary loan from among the considerable resources that are at his or her disposal. For the first, I am a presence. For the second, I am an object. An object that's a person object, but an object that gets a certain amount of time and a certain amount of listening and a certain amount of response, and then that's it. I'll make you a loan, and it may be a generous, good-hearted loan from within, but I'm only going to go so far, and then after that, my ears are closed. After that, my time is up. After that, I really have no more to do with you. You're on your own, Jack, as we might say. Because I've helped you out enough. I mean, there's many ways of being unavailable that just amount to being a jerk and ignoring people from the start or being totally obsessed with oneself and distracted. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But there's also ways of being unavailable even when somebody uses the language of availability or attentiveness or care or concern, but isn't really committed. This is an existential position here, a commitment of oneself. And interestingly, here's another thing to point out, as we're going to look at in just a moment. Sometimes when people aren't able to be available for others, we can blame them for it, but it stems from how damaged they are, how much they are turned in on themselves. And so, you know, should we say, well, they're totally blameless in that? Yes, in a certain respect, they may not be actually responsible for that. Or if they are, it's because of a whole bunch of choices they made along the way to close themselves off at different points that then produced these effects later on that they had no idea they were careening towards. But it's a bad state. It's not a good state. And so we can distinguish between blaming somebody for something being their responsibility and blaming somebody for being a mess, being in the condition that they are. And it's more of a, it's really unfortunate that this is the case for you. And we might have to be available for them as well as a result in order to help them get out of that, if they're going to get out of it. And so he's got a number of interesting analyses that he provides here, the first of which is this notion of being totally with the other versus a temporary loan. He then also talks about at the heart of unavailability, we find there's always a certain alienation. And he gives some examples. He says, others invite my sympathy for a certain misfortune they tell me about. I understand what they describe. I recognize in the abstract the people they're talking about to serve my compassion. I know it would be logical and just to respond to this case with sympathy. Which sympathy I confer, if you will, but only in thought, because I finally have to admit I'm not moved. It doesn't affect me. Besides, I regret this contradiction. I say that I should, in fact, be moved by this, but I'm not moved. I don't care. It's not my problem, one could say. Actually, a lot of people will say it's not my problem, although a lot of other people say that's not in my job description, right? And they'll often be talking outside of the workplace about other things that we could call functions in a Marcellian way. He says, what remains with me is the inadmissible feeling that after all, these are people I don't know, and if one had to be touched by every human misfortune, life would no longer be possible. So that's one aspect. Alienation is a term that he's using here. This is a very pregnant term. We can think about all the different ways in which people can be alienated from themselves, from others, from the essence of human being, from their labor, from all sorts of matters, from their history, their past. And these alienations are ways of, you might say, causing fissures, breaks within a person that make it more difficult for them to be available to others. And he goes on and he says, you know, in the normal development of a human being, there is an increasingly precise and almost automatic sorting out of what is one's concern, what is not, what one is responsible for, and what one is not. And then he goes on and gives this metaphor of like concentric circles of concern or lack of concern. We become the center of a kind of mental space that is arranged in concentric zones of decreasing interest and involvement. He talks about us secreting a hard shell, right? That becomes increasingly hard and imprisons us. And then he says, we can have encounters that break through this. It could be an other who enters my life and I recognize the need and I become available to them. I break out of that shell. Or it could be the sanctity realized in certain beings that reveals to us what we call the normal order is, from a higher point of view, merely the subversion of an order which is its opposite when we reflect on what people call the transcendent or the holy. And not in an abstract way, but in a genuine, concrete way that can change the world for us. And we can see, wow, this person over here who I previously passed up every time that I was engaged with them, not really engaged, but doing something with them in the past, they are, in some respect, a reflection of something that I ought to value. I ought to open myself up to them and find out what's actually there and what's going on. Make room in myself, overcome their initial suspicion since I've treated them in this way in the past. He also says something really interesting about unavailability and egoism or selfishness. He says to be unavailable is not only to be preoccupied with oneself, but in a certain way, encumbered with oneself, to be entangled with oneself. This is different than just focusing on oneself. This is not being able to get away from focusing on oneself. The things that you have used to define who you are could be, your status symbols, your wealth, your relationships with others. And he goes on and he's got some really interesting cautions here. He says that the immediate object can vary in an indefinite number of ways. To be preoccupied with oneself can mean to be caught up in one's health, one's wealth, one's romantic life, and even, notice this one, even with one's own interior perfection. People who are engaging in personal development can become preoccupied with themselves and encumbered by themselves in that way. Am I making it to the next stage? Am I doing things that are holding myself back? And in doing so, they lose sight of other human beings. They lose sight of all the things towards which we ought to have availability or disponibilité, to be disposed towards. He goes on and he says, what must be recognized is that the opposite of the being preoccupied with himself or herself is not the being who is empty or indifferent. The opposition is between the being who is transparent and the one who is opaque. And we have to try to figure this out. It's a question of a sort of block or fixation. And he suggests that perhaps a certain kind of psychotherapy or psychoanalysis might be useful for figuring this sort of thing out. And he says, what is remarkable is that this anxiety persists at the center of the fixation and gives it this constricted character that I spoke of in connection with the degradation of the will. And he talks about people who are engaging in pessimism or despair as often preoccupied with the self as well. By contrast, what is the available soul like? He says, the soul who is most at the disposal of others is the most consecrated, the most inwardly dedicated. To genuinely know yourself and to be a self means to be available, which means opening yourself up to others, not just shrinking yourself inward, keeping them at a distance, not allowing them to distract you from your spiritual quest. You might say that the emblem of this is the Good Samaritan who picks up the person who's been attacked on the road, somebody who's actually his enemy, who he doesn't have to stop for, and takes some time out of his day, takes him to the local inn, dresses his wounds, and says, here's some money, take care of this guy, I'm going to be back and I'm going to check in. That I'm going to be back and I'm going to be check in is a central part of the story. Marcel's not talking about that story here, of course, but I think that narrative is very helpful. It's a continual thing. It's not just a loan of, well, I'll be there for you right now because your mom died and I'll be a shoulder for you to cry on for about the next 6 hours. And then I'm getting on the plane and I'm flying back to where I live. And then, maybe we'll have a few Facebook exchanges or some emails or, a Skype call. But you get 6 hours after that and that's it. That's not a way of being available, right? You never know when you're going to be called upon again. But Marcel is saying that this is the path to really being a full self. The one who is at the most at the disposal of others is the one who is the most consecrated, in line with, you know, whatever is transcendent, and the most inwardly dedicated. This soul, he says, is protected against despair because this soul knows it does not belong just to itself and that the only legitimate use it can make of its freedom consists in recognizing that fact. So this is, you might say, and he recognizes this, put out as kind of an ideal. Whether or not we are available to others is not an on-off switch. Either we were, you know, previously not available and now we are. It is on a continuum, but we should strive, according to Marcel, as much as possible to be available. That is what it means to be genuinely ethical, to be committed within the world. This is a possibility for human beings. Some things stand in the way, and those would be obstacles to this disposition of availability. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.